We will welcome in two of Wisconsin's congressional delegation during this hour. We will hear from Democratic U.S. Representative Mark Pocan and Republican U.S. Representative Glenn Grothman. They'll weigh in on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's speech to Congress, Wisconsin's right to work law, and the fatal police shooting in Madison, and whatever else you want to ask them. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, March the 10th. Let me welcome in our first guest, Mark Pocan, a Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District, which includes Madison and parts of southern Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Last hour, we talked with a number of guests about the deadly police shooting in Madison. You used to represent that district when you served in the state legislature. What is your reaction to this whole situation?
Well, you know, obviously, it's a tragedy. We feel we really feel for the family of Tony Robinson. And, you know, I think a couple of things. One, you know, we're waiting to see the investigation exactly what they're going to give us for details around this. But I think it also highlights just the problem we have with race inequalities in the criminal justice system, especially in Wisconsin. You know, there recently was an article about what every state was worst at, and Wisconsin was worst at having twice the rate of incarceration of African-American males than the rest of the country, the national rate. And the fact that in Dane County, I think our rate is 8 times, is a real problem. And we have to have some real solutions towards that. And I'm not saying that these are directly connected at this point, because we have to have this report come out. I think it certainly has brought to the forefront some of these other conversations that have probably been stagnant for too long.
Yeah. So what might you suggest be done on a federal level that could address the issues involved with police shootings like this?
Well, I mean, one thing that I've always been supportive of is making sure that we really keep statistics as we have arrests, to make sure that we're, you know, making sure we understand who's being arrested, who's being pulled over, in what areas, and for what reasons, that you don't have these rates that are so far off between African Americans and Caucasians and the rest of the population. Clearly, there is something wrong across the country. In some parts of the country, you wouldn't think that. Madison, Wisconsin, but when you look at the statistics, we still have a problem. We need to deal with that. That's one issue. But I think we really need to bring together the folks in law enforcement and in the civil rights community, and let's come up with the right and proper solutions, and let's address it. And I think that's what really needs to happen, because I used to be the ranking Democrat on the corrections committee. I used to deal a lot with corrections in Wisconsin. For what we spend to send someone to the prison system, you could send someone to an Ivy League college, or almost to an Ivy League college. We need to get smarter on crime. And I think there's now a movement nationally of conservatives and progressives along this. I actually had a 20-minute conversation last year with Grover Norquist, who I have very little in common generally. But one thing we had in common is we've got to treat the criminal justice system differently. And, you know, there's some things we're trying to work at the federal level, too, of trying to review what laws we have out there and where we may have duplication and unnecessary laws. There's a lot of things I think we can get done, but we probably, in my opinion, a significant commission putting a package of things together, so we're not trying to implement one or two things, but really enough things to address this issue.
Another state issue before we move on to some national issues. Wisconsin now has a right to work law. Governor Walker signing this into law yesterday, 25th state in the nation. Why do you think this is going to be bad for Wisconsin?
Well, you know, first of all, I think Governor Walker has taken us down the path of his presidential aspirations. And I feel that he's really ignoring the needs of Wisconsin. You know, we're dead last in the Midwest for job creation. We know across the country we've had 58 or 59 consecutive months of job creation. We know that the stock market is largely almost doubled from when it was at the bottom of the crash. We know that productivity is way up. The only thing that's dead flat right now is wages. And the one thing that's undeniable is that unions help to have stronger wages, not just for people in unions, but for people outside of unions. And the fact that at a time, there's probably one of the biggest issues we should be dealing with is that flatlining of wages. And instead, to have the governor put together what he did for a proposal is just a terrible idea. It's the exact wrong direction. It's all about him running for president, as so many other things now he's flip-flopping on. And, you know, it's just really unfortunate. His big argument is he has foreign policy experience because he's taken on 100,000 union protesters. You know, if the problem is the reality of his foreign policy depth is that, you know, he went to Epcot Center with his family at one point, and that's not enough to be elected president. Now he's trying to make this tale somehow about him fighting unions. He's actually fighting the working families of Wisconsin, and this is a law that will depress wages in the state, and it's the exact wrong direction. It's done for all the wrong reasons.
Let's take a call from Jim in River Falls on a different issue. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thank you very much. Well, and it may relate somewhat, I guess. Yeah. I've got concerns, and I'd like to get Representative Procan's opinion of the Trans-Pacific Agreement and what that might do for wages for workers. And from my understanding is it could create autonomous work zones that the regulations of the United States or the state or local governments wouldn't apply in. And as we saw with NAFTA, that hurt wages and unions. So it seems like these negotiations are going on in private as well without a lot of input from either unions or from legislators.
Representative Pocan.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. I think one of the issues that we're going to be facing this year in Congress will be not just the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but the first vote will be the fast-track proposal, which fast-track means that Congress essentially gives up our constitutional duty to affect treaties. What we're going to do is give the president carte blanche, and I don't care if it's this president or a different president, but we'll be giving up our ability to amend and greatly limit our ability to debate any trade deal. This Trans-Pacific Partnership deal is like NAFTA on steroids. It's a giant trade deal that is up to 40% of the world's economy and the countries that are involved. And yet some of the countries involved are countries like Vietnam, where the minimum wage is less than 50 cents an hour. How can you possibly have a labor agreement if you don't have strong enough language with a country that pays less than 50 cents an hour? It's going to depress wages here, and we're going to have more job loss going overseas. And I understand the president, and some look at this for geopolitical reasons. We have partners in that region. They want to give them something. But I'm looking this at from the perspective of jobs and wages, which is, again, the main issue that we've got to address right now. And this will have a very negative effect unless we can get really strong language. And it's going to be almost impossible to have really strong language when you have countries like Vietnam in that trade agreement. So the fact that it's negotiated in secret, that even members of Congress can't have our staff see it. We can't take notes when we look at it. There's a lot of problems with it, Joy. I could do an hour on it, and I'm not going to. But specifically to the caller's question, I think it's got a very strong potential to not only depress wages but send more jobs overseas. And that's the wrong direction at a time that we're still trying to get our economy completely back where we need to have it.
I want to get to another issue before our news break. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke to Congress last week about the threat posed by Iran and what he called a bad nuclear deal between the U.S. and Iran. You were one of about 50 Democrats in the House and Senate who did not attend the speech. Why weren't you there?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there are actually more than that. And, you know, we didn't go out there and put out we were boycotting it. There's a list of people who are boycotting it. We just chose to watch it from our office. I think it was a very bad decision by Speaker Boehner to ignore consulting with the president like we always do when you have a leader from another country come and address Congress. And the fact that it was done 2 weeks before an election, it was really, you know, more of a pre-election speech than anything else. But to have him come and really critique U.S. foreign policy on the very same place where the president gave his State of the Union at this time period was a bad idea. So I signed a letter with, I think, 29 people earlier saying, look, postpone it. You know, I have no problem, but, you know, let's not do it for Israeli election purposes. And I think ultimately Speaker Boehner made a very bad decision by doing what he did. I think the prime minister probably should not have come when he did. But I wasn't trying to raise it to the point of a boycott. It was more of, you know, I think it was a very bad idea. And ultimately, I think now we're seeing what the speech was, everything that we feared. It was just a bunch of Iran bashing. And the issue deserves a much higher level debate than something done 2 weeks before an election.
We have just a minute for a quick response to this. Charles on Facebook wants to know if you think the U.S. Senate committed treason by entering talks with the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu without the president's coordination and undermining the president's nuclear negotiations by threatening Iran in an open letter.
Yeah, I don't know if it's treason, but I certainly know that, unfortunately, there's a lot of people now in Congress from the Tea Party wing that don't have respect for, I think, government in the way that we need to. And when you circumvent the process that we have where the president has these responsibilities and they do something like this really as more of a gimmick and to get attention, you certainly risk everything that, you know, we've been working on in this area. It's selfish, it's wrongheaded, and unfortunately, we've got too many people like that in Congress, which is why we're not functioning.
We'll take more of your questions for U.S. Representative Mark Pocan after we check the latest news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is another edition of Ask Your Congress Member. We are talking with Mark Pocan, a Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District, and we have a couple more minutes if you have a question for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. A week before last, we had Republican U.S. Representative Reed Ribble of Appleton on with us, and he told us about why he was supporting or why he was authoring a bill that would delist the gray wolf. And we have Greg on Facebook saying, I support the wolf hunting bill. What's your opinion of it, Representative Pocan?
Well, there's a couple of bills. There's some disagreement even in the region, even among neighboring states right now between Wisconsin and Minnesota, and I think there may be a few other different positions out there. I'm not sure where we're quite at yet in Congress, and given that this Congress doesn't have a record of passing a lot of legislation, I'm not sure where we're going to wind up yet, but I'm not sure if we're at the point where we're going to have a single vote come up to Congress on the issue, and I think we're still trying to work it out among the region.
We are going to hit the debt ceiling on Sunday, the 15th. Is the U.S. going to default, or will there be some sort of deal to raise the limit?
You know, I think these fights that we've had around this, you know, I've signed on to legislation that would, you know, automatically change it as we change our spending patterns. There's so many things that we should do differently than the way we do it. Right now, in the last several years, every time this comes up, this is just a new opportunity to talk about shutting down government, to try to grandstand and make a point that usually goes absolutely nowhere. And we're not functioning as a government because of it. So, you know, I would hope that everyone would decide to be more adult-like when we deal with these issues and not do what we almost did with Homeland Security, where we almost brought ourselves to a shutdown. I think we were minutes literally from a shutdown once again. You know, we need Congress to start functioning, and this is part of how we function. And I'm hoping that we can be responsible and deal with it, but more importantly than deal with a budget and actually pass a budget and do the normal process like we should. You know, speaking of Reed Ribble, you know, he and I are supporting a bill, and I give Reed a lot of credit to try to change the budget process to a biennial process, you know, where we do it every 2 years. Since we barely get it done now and we often don't get it done other than continuing resolutions, why don't we do it like Wisconsin and most states, where we do a budget 1 year and then spend the next year doing more review and analysis? I think that'd be a much better procedure.
In our final moments with you, is there anything that you're personally working on right now that you want your constituents to know about?
You know, I think one of the issues that we are really pushing is this constitutional amendment on voting rights. We want to have a much broader, larger conversation about that absolute right that everyone should have to vote and that we don't actually explicitly have in the Constitution. Representative Keith Ellison from Minnesota and I have introduced this. We're gaining a lot of momentum. We have actually more sponsors already in the first 2 months of Congress than we had the last 2 years. We've got groups like the NAACP and Fair Vote and other groups with us. I just think it's such a fundamental right, especially given the weekend with Selma bringing up all the issues of the importance of voting. We need to do something big enough and strong enough so that every single person is guaranteed that voice in democracy. And without that, I think we really risk our democracy as a whole.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you, Joy.
Mark Pocan, Democratic U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Time to welcome in another U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. Glenn Grothman joins us now, and he will answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. It's always nice to be talking to the erudite listeners of Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's always good to have you. Thanks for being with us. So first, any thoughts on the police shooting in Madison, the demonstrations that have followed, and the national, even international news coverage of what's happening here?
Well, we don't know the facts yet, and it's unfair to be critical of the police officer or to try to fan the flames until we know the facts. I thought it was interesting that earlier today you had a relative of the young man who was shot, and he wasn't fanning the flames. He said, you know, let's wait and see what happened here. So it's unfortunate there are always people who want to have conflict and are weighing in before the facts are there.
Yeah. And what about, though, examining the racial disparities that exist in Wisconsin's criminal justice system? Do you think that that's something that needs to be done?
Well, there are problems in Wisconsin. It starts in the education system, starts in the family structure, and these are things that I have tried to deal with when I was in the state legislature. But, you know, you got to get down to the root causes. It is unfortunately true that in some of the minority neighborhoods, you do see higher crime rates. With higher crime rates is going to come, you know, higher incarceration rates. But the question is why there are higher crime rates in the first place, and let's address those problems. Be it bad schools, be it family structure, whatever.
U.S. Representative Mark Pocan told us that he thinks it is a bad thing for Wisconsin now that we are the 25th right-to-work state in the nation. What do you think right-to-work will mean for Wisconsin?
Well, I think for a lot of businesses it doesn't matter. But when you have these big multinational businesses deciding where they're going to plant, put a plant, or where they're going to downsize, I think right to work is something that is going to help Wisconsin. I mean, if you look over a period of time, when businesses leave Wisconsin and go somewhere else in the United States, Texas or that sort of thing, I think you'll find frequently we are losing jobs to right to work states. And those big multinational companies, let's face it, they frequently pay more. So if we want to be in competition for those jobs, if we'd say one day want to reopen the Janesville plant, I think it was a wise move for the legislature in that regard.
Congressman Grothman, Carol on Facebook gave you, I guess, a promotion. She says, Senator Grothman is against entitlements. How does he feel about workers not paying their fair share and still getting the benefits and representation of a union?
Well, actually, I think she's assuming that benefits are necessarily coming from the union, and that's not necessarily true. You know, there's situations in which maybe you're in a non-union plant and making more, and I think sometimes if people are treated as individuals, maybe the harder working people are going to make more money. So I do not necessarily think that those benefits are necessarily coming from the union.
Yeah. I saw that in a tour of your district last week, you made a prediction that Governor Walker will be the GOP presidential nominee. What makes you think that?
I've said that for quite a while, and I say it for this reason. Right now, the candidate who's probably going to have the most money is Jeb Bush. I do not think most Republicans want Jeb Bush to be our nominee. I think, first of all, at the time his brother left the presidency, the economy was not in all a very good situation. Furthermore, I think George Bush as president really didn't enforce the immigration laws very much. He spent a huge amount of money. And Republicans are supposed to be the party of less government. It's hard to make a case that George Bush was even remotely a president who believed in less government. So for that reason, I don't think the public wants Jeb Bush. And if it's not going to be Jeb Bush, it's going to be somebody else. I think Scott Walker has a national profile in which he is more well-respected by Republicans outside Wisconsin than in Wisconsin. And I think if you get around the country, you'll find that to be true. If you're going to say not Jeb Bush, who? I think our protester friends in Madison have made Scott Walker a national figure. You know, Scott Walker is more well-known than a Kasich or a Perry or a Daniels, and that is because of the huge protests. And people are looking for somebody with little guts. They know our country has huge problems, and they're saying, hey, we want somebody to be president who is not afraid to take a stand. And Scott Walker's established he's not afraid to take a stand, and for those reasons, I think he's going to do very well throughout the primaries, throughout the caucuses, and I think he's going to be the nominee.
Is Governor Walker pushing conservative issues like right to work, the 20-week abortion ban, huge or big cuts anyway to the budget, leading to smaller government? Is this because he's running for president?
Well, the reason there are cuts in the budget is because the economy took a little dip, and if you have less sales and income tax revenue coming in, you can't spend all as much as perhaps you wanted to spend. So I don't think this is something that was driven by him running for president. It's something driven by lower tax receipts. And as we know on right to work, that's not something Scott Walker pushed through. That's something really more Scott Fitzgerald pushed through the legislature. And then it arrived on Scott Walker's desk and he signed it. So I don't think either one of those things are things he's doing because he's running for president. Those are things that just kind of wound up there on his watch.
Well, we should move on to some other issues. What did you make of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's speech to Congress last week?
It was a very impressive speech. He made two points that I think the American people and the American Congress are going to have to weigh as Barack Obama tries to cut this deal with Iran. First of all, is Barack Obama really feel a 10-year deal is adequate? I mean, Joy, it's 2015. For people like you and I, we feel 2005 was just like yesterday. Mm-hmm. Okay? If Barack Obama feels that he is satisfied to say Iran will not have a nuclear weapon in 10 years, should we be satisfied with it? And the second thing is, if Iran has all these centrifuges, which can make the material for a nuclear weapon in a relatively short period of time, is that something we can tolerate? I mean, you've got a country that is certainly very energy independent on its own, you know, one of the most oil-rich countries in the world. What are they doing with all these centrifuges, particularly at a time when the leadership of Iran is spoiling to destroy Israel, a country that is like three countries away from Iran? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. But nevertheless, they keep spouting this angry rhetoric and then running all these centrifuges for energy that apparently they don't need. You have to wonder. We've been very fortunate, Joy. We have not had nuclear weapons go off for war purposes, for testing purposes, but for war purposes, throughout my whole life and throughout your whole life. And someday that may happen again. And if you look at the type of rhetoric coming out of Iran, I am glad they do not have nuclear weapons now. And I would not want to be living in Israel when Iran did get nuclear weapons, given that they keep obsessing over destroying Israel, a country that's not even on their border, not close to their border.
We had Charles on Facebook who wanted me to ask you and Representative Pocan whether you think the U.S. Senate committed treason for, among other things, undermining the president's nuclear negotiations by threatening Iran in an open letter.
No, I don't think that's true. I mean, any individual congressman, U.S. senator, can make statements whatever they want. And I think throughout our country's history, there have been times, particularly people on the left who are proud when individual congressmen disagree with the president in times of war in particular. You know, you look at what happened during Vietnam, something that the left to this day is very proud of, people who tried to end the war when American presidents were still trying to win. And that was in times of war. So if you have a situation in which individual congressman, individual U.S. senator disagrees with Barack Obama, the idea they're not supposed to say it, I don't buy into that.
We have lots of callers with questions, too. So Royce and Madison, go ahead.
Good morning, Congressman. There were a number of us disappointed that you voted against the Amtrak reauthorization bill last week. And even though Paul Ryan and Mr. Riddle voted for it, is that because you don't want to keep the train that goes through your district, the Empire Builder?
No, I think it's very important to keep the Empire Builder. First of all, you're wrong. Reed Ribble and Paul Ryan both voted for an amendment to stop the funding of Amtrak. Now, I really feel that that was a statement amendment, more that we have to not necessarily defund it altogether, but there right now is a huge subsidy. We are borrowing 14% of our federal budget. If we don't do something about the huge debt and the deficits we're running, it's going to be just a huge financial catastrophe for this country. And if you look at that overall bill, I guess what you're talking about is the final vote on the bill, not the separate vote on the Amtrak. The final vote on the bill, which was the Homeland Security bill, which you're right, Ribble and Ryan voted for. I felt overall that bill was just too high spending. And, you know, if you're borrowing 14%, to me what you ought to be looking at almost is a 14% cut on at least discretionary spending, because the mandatory spending we know is going up. And if you look at that bill, not only the Amtrak part, or I'm sorry, this was the Amtrak, yeah, that bill overall, I did not feel that the vote coming out of appropriations was really focusing on that 14%.
Yeah.
We're borrowing.
So there's a lot of you know, stuff in various bills and various amendments, but when it comes down to it, you don't want Amtrak to get federal funding?
No, I think they're getting too much federal funding, I would say, is my feeling on that. I was disappointed when I looked on the bill that there wasn't somewhat of a cut there. I mean, you got to remember, when you're putting together a budget and you see we're borrowing 14% of that budget, every line, you got to say, man, we should be cutting unless we have a really, really, really good reason not to cut. And I think if you looked at that bill, that's just not true.
So what's going to happen with regard to the debt ceiling this weekend?
I think eventually something's going to pass. I disagree with Mark Pocan. I heard his response before, and I think we ought to put something in there acknowledging that we're overspending, maybe do something with some of the mandatory spending eventually this session, maybe with the disability system has a problem with it right now, but look at some of the mandatory spending programs, at least begin to make some dent on the spending. Because it is an embarrassment that we keep raising this debt ceiling. And ultimately, it is going to catch up to us. And I don't like raising the debt ceiling without putting something in the bill, raising the debt ceiling, acknowledging the problem, and trying to spend a little bit less.
We have just a minute before we have to break for news. What are you working on that you want your constituents to know about?
There are two things. I'm on something called the Republican Study Committee. We've got a subgroup on welfare. As your listeners know, I did run on the huge marriage penalties associated with our welfare system. I want to bring that up to my colleagues and see if we can do something to reduce that marriage penalty. I'm also on the Budget Committee. That's not the most important committee dealing with the budget, but within the next 3 weeks, we are going to send a bill out setting the parameters for discretionary spending, and we're doing what we can to make sure that that is as low as possible.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you much, Joy.
Glenn Grothman, a Republican U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District, which includes Fond du Lac, Sheboygan, and parts of East Central Wisconsin. In our first segment, we heard from Democratic U.S. Representative Mark Pocan from Madison. Coming up after we check news, we are going to celebrate the spring thaw. Or maybe you're sad to see the snow melt. Let us know. And we'll talk about how long this warmer weather will hang around. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.